So I'm here talking with Janice Folk Dawson, who is the president of QP Local 1334, which represents the unionized trades, maintenance, and custodial staff on campus.
Thanks, Mandy. It's great to be here.
So Janice, I've been reading in the paper recently and on the University of Guelph website that QP 1334 is in a potential walkout position, so a potential legal strike position as of October 3rd. Is that correct?
That is correct. But I have to add that it's not just a legal strike position. It's also what we call referred to as a legal lockout strike position. So at this point, on October 3rd, either party, the university is in the legal position to be able to lock us out, or the union would be in a legal position to carry out job action, which could include strike.
So for all the folks out there who maybe aren't that familiar with unions and how they work, because I know that, you know, these days there's fewer and fewer people who actually have the ability to be in a union. Maybe let's talk like a little bit basically so that when people read these things in the newspaper and they read about, you know, collective bargaining and mediation and like all these words that people are using, let's talk about what those actually mean. So first of all, super, super, super fundamentally, what is a union?
So a union is a group of people who have the same sort of job classification. So they work either in the public sector or the private sector. A union is a group of people who get a charter to be a union, to be recognized under the Labor Relations Act. So they have bargaining rights. They represent all of the members in the union, and they have bargaining rights, which means that they enter into contract negotiations with the employer on behalf of all the members of the union. So they come up with the contract. They're the representatives for those members.
So it's basically a way to protect yourself on
it's
the
right.
job,
it's
right?
It's a collective of workers who negotiate so that they all have the same terms and conditions for their jobs.
Awesome. And so that is basically what people mean when they talk about collective bargaining,
That's
right?
correct.
Excellent. Okay. So now the position that you folks are in right now is that the university has asked for mediation. So can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Okay, so let's go back to how the process starts. So when we get those collective agreements, they have an expiry date on them. At the time of the expiry date, there's a legal requirement for the parties to enter into what's called negotiations. And that means that we look at it's looking for a renewal of the collective agreement. So we meet face-to-face, the union side, we elect members to represent us. And the union, the university puts up managers and HR people. And so the two parties meet and we go over the collective agreements. Obviously, we have proposals that we table, and the university, the employer has proposals that they table. We continue to work, meeting on, you know, we had 9 meetings where we exchange those proposals and try to come to agreement on the terms and conditions. When that breaks down, so when either side is not moving anymore, either party can apply for what's called conciliation. And conciliation is that the government appoints a third party mediator to come in and help the parties come to a resolve. The conciliator has no binding power. They're just there to act as a third party to hopefully get both sides talking to come to that settlement. We entered into conciliation on May 9th when the university asked for us to move into conciliation. They weren't prepared to move or to table any more offers. They felt that they needed a third party to come in and help us come to that settlement. So they applied for conciliation. A conciliator was appointed, but we weren't able to meet until September 11th. On September 11th, both parties met again, and we were still meeting face-to-face, but we had the conciliator in the room. At that point, the university did not move their offer. There was no movement on that day. And finally, late on September 11th at 10:30, the university requested that the conciliator file a no board. And what a no board means is that the both parties have not been able to come to a resolution, and it puts a deadline on it. 17 days after that no board is issued means that we would be in a legal position to take strike action, and the university would be in a legal position to lock us out. The final step that happens is mediation, what you asked about. And so what happens is there is now a deadline put on the employer. And so the mediator, who is the same person that was the conciliator, has requested, will we get to get back together on October 1st and 2nd, just prior to the deadline, and we will do what we call, you know, marathon bargaining, and she will mediate, and hopefully we will be able to avert either a lockout or strike.
Can we talk a little bit about lockouts and strikes? So basically, the effect of a lockout versus a strike, I imagine, is much the same. What's the difference between the two, and how would you end up in one as opposed to the other?
Right. So our intention is, we did go back to our membership, and that's the part of a union we have to, it's very democratically done. So once we entered into conciliation, we pulled our members back together, and we explained to them that one of the things that we might have to do is to take job action and to remove our services to be able to effect a deal. So by law, we are required to go back, and everybody in the bargaining unit has the right to vote in a strike vote. We did that on September 9th, just prior to going into conciliation. At that point, we're able to be a little bit more direct with our members and tell them what the issues are on the table. As prior to that, it's pretty confidential. So what a strike is when we are not able to negotiate what we need to be able to negotiate at the table, sometimes the only option we have is to remove our services. And so that what that means is for our bargaining unit is that all of the tradespeople, all of the service people, so our custodians, our tradespeople, our service people would not be doing their work. They would actually be walking the picket line. And we would at that point be talking to members of the community about what actually the issues were, and hopefully our bargaining team is in there doing the bargaining. A lockout is when the employer decides that, you know, you're not negotiating with them and they don't want to have you come in and do your work. And so they physically lock the keys, take the keys away from us, and refuse us to come in and to do our work. For our members, I want to be clear on both sides. The union takes care of them, whether it's a lockout or a strike. We still make sure that those members are taken care of and their benefits are covered.
And so if there's a strike, then that seems like the sort of the power is in the hands of the union at that point the union started the strike and therefore presumably has the power to end it. And in a lockout, then is it more just that, like, okay, I'm being very unclear. So what is the, like, when would it be beneficial to the university, I guess, to have a lockout? Like, presumably they don't want a strike. Presumably they want people to keep working. So why would they choose a lockout? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just confused about why they would do that from their end. I understand why union members would strike,
right,
but why would they do a lockout?
And I'm not really clear on why they would do that, except that they, you know, obviously are saving money is the one thing. And it's certainly a power play, right? The issue is right now, we've been trying to negotiate. And the university refuses to negotiate, refuses to move. So even though we would think that in reality the union should have the power when we're doing job action, the fact of the matter is no union person actually wants to go on strike. Mm-hmm. And for our members, it's a pretty tough boat to be in. When we're making it from paycheck to paycheck, putting yourself on the line like that, and then knowing that the university, has all the power to put out all the propaganda, to get all of those, to set a pretty ugly tone about what we're actually negotiating for. It certainly is a power struggle, mm-hmm. right? We're frustrated by the fact that we wanted to continue negotiating on May 9th when we had people there. The university walked away from the table. We were still tabling on September 11th and had started to offer other cost-saving measures, and the university walked away from the table. So we're fearful that they're going to lock us out because they've been pulling this power intimidation tactic all the way through. We would wish that they would actually put a little bit more emphasis on negotiating and coming up with some creative ideas instead of the scare tactics we think that they're doing in the media about threatening, that it's about, that we're, jeopardizing students and that it's about wages. That's not the issues.
Well, you know, that is a time-honored tactic of the university to try to pit students against workers. And in a minute, I want to talk about like why it's really important that people are in solidarity with workers on this campus. But first of all, thank you, first of all, for the lesson in labor relations right there, because it's complicated, right? And
it really
a lot
is.
Of people don't have experience being in a union. And I think that there's a lot of lack of understanding of how unions work and why they exist.
And not even just for people that aren't in a union, Mandy. I think that sometimes even people in a union, and that's what we've been trying to do with our members, and that's why I'm really glad to be able to come on this show too, is to be able to explain to members, to talk to them, mm-hmm. Because what they're hearing is the media, and it is a lot of legal and you're not quite sure, right?
Yeah.
So it's very confusing for everybody.
And that's another really good tactic, is to, put it in all this language that only a few people can understand,
right.
These are just classic tactics of people in power.
Exactly.
Okay, but let's talk a little more specifically now. So we've talked about, generally the union and generally the bargaining and how it works and what might be happening in the next few days. But let's talk about specifically the people. So the people in QP 1334, how many people are there?
I just did the per capita and there's 225 of us left.
And that is all of the, and all of those people work on the University of Guelph campus?
They all work on the main campus.
Okay.
And they would work out, our charter says that we're trades, maintenance, and service workers. So it's all of the trades folks that you see on campus. So everywhere from plumbers, electricians, controls mechanics, vehicle mechanics, IT technicians, there's some
okay.
of those there. Our service people, building mechanics, different trades that do service, and then our custodial services are also part of the bargaining unit.
And so are all of those people under the Department of Physical Resources?
No, we have physical resources, athletics, UC admin, parking and security services. I think that's it.
Okay. So that's a lot.
Student housing.
Student housing as well.
Right? Because
okay.
we also carry, we have the porters and the people who work in the rinks and who work the fields are also people with QP.
Okay. So there's a lot of people doing a lot of different
exactly.
kinds of things around the campus. Okay. So folks who are listening, you should definitely look out for those folks and, let them know that you support them. They're working for you. They're doing a lot of awesome work. So it's important to sort of appreciate, on campus, we don't always think about the people who do those kinds of jobs, people think of the students and they think of the faculty and people don't really think about all the people who actually maintain the places that they come to and who, provide the services that are sort of maybe a little more hidden.
Right.
And I think that's really a problem.
And I think part of the problem is we always feel that we're the invisible ones, especially the people who work night shift.
Right.
And so we have a shift. It used to be about half and half. I'd say it's not quite half and half now, but a number of our members work night shift, which is 10:30 at night till 7 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And so they're the, forgotten ones that are up here. They have sort of a look into everybody's life when people aren't there. But they don't have the same relationship as some of the day shift people have. And one of the best things that when you get to talk to some of the workers is the relationship, especially in residence, between the workers, the custodians, and the students. And often that turns into a really close family tie. And we often hear from the students about how it is that it was the custodian in their building when they were sick and nobody else, and the custodian was bringing them soup or was checking on them, right? And so the relationship that happens between the workers and the students is something that's pretty special. And you can tell that the university's tried to, you know, pull that apart. Just the human interaction has been absolutely great.
So maybe we could run through that just one more time. So if you're walking around campus on any given day, the people that you run into who are probably members of QP 1334 would be?
So they would be your custodians. Uh-huh. They would be any of your tradespeople that you see. They would be the porters that you see in residences. Truck drivers, those people moving around town, the mail, people who are moving the mail around.
Okay.
And they're all wearing work clothing. So pretty much it's red tops and black pants. They're our members.
All right. So there you
have
it.
And they'd love to chat with you.
There you have it. QP 1334. Keep an eye out for them. Okay. So maybe we could talk now about So obviously there are issues of contention between the administration and the union. So what are the main points of contention? Like, what are the main things that, people are unwilling to budge on that has brought you to this point?
Right. So we went in for the very first time with a very lean package. We recognized that there was, this was not the time to be, if you remember back in April when we started this, negotiating, there was questions about where the government was, and we had just watched what had happened to the workers in schools, and so had watched the interference of the government in the bargaining process. So we were very fearful, and as a sector, so university workers across the province, many of us going into a coordinated bargaining strategy, all decided that we would go in with pretty lean packages and that we wanted to go in and out pretty quickly. People need to realize that when you go into collective bargaining, we only get to get there every 3 or 4 years. So when we go in, we tend to make it pretty extensive because it's our sort of one kick at the can to make sure that our members are getting what they need. So typically, we go in with a pretty extensive package. We decided quite clearly not to do that this time. Went in with a very lean package, went into negotiations prior to the expiry, which is also something that's unusual, and the university was on board with that. We were very clear right from the very beginning. We needed to, my members were very clear, we needed to protect and defend the pensions and that they would do that, and we needed some job security. We also, at that point, tabled wage increases because we don't see anything from the government that says that there is no expectation for wage increases, right? And we deserve a wage increase. We're working, you know, basically paycheck to paycheck. We're some of the lower paid workers on this campus.
And everything's going up.
And everything's going up constantly. So we have been able to negotiate a few of the other things that were priorities for us. So, you know, we wanted to look at some equity hiring policies and things like that. We've been able to get some of those things in the collective agreement and come to terms. We have not been able to come to terms on the pensions, on job security, or on wages. For the local, we've been very clear. We have a triangle that we need to get all three pieces of that triangle, something on those so that we have a balanced collective agreement. For us, the pension issue and the job security issue are the huge ones. The university is, you know, stuck on the wages. They're not prepared to give base wage increases in every year. And for us, that's a problem. We believe that, I'm seeing wage increases at other universities with other types of bargaining units. So in my mind, it raises the ugly word of, is this a class issue again, that QP members across this province are being offered zero base wage increases, and yet we're watching staff associations and faculty associations getting base wage increases. Mm-hmm. So for us, we are stuck on the issue, and I've been back to my members now, and they've been very clear. They will not take the basket of concessions that the university is asking for on our pensions, and they do believe that we deserve some job security, at least the rights to new buildings.
Can you talk about pensions? So this has been, you know, a thing in the media, like not just in Canada, but also a lot in Europe too, about, you know, how old do people need to be before they get their pension? You know, is the pension, the government pension, like your, what do you call that?
Defined benefit and defined contributions?
No, sorry. I just mean the CPP, like the Canada Pension
Plan. Canada Pension, yes.
That, you know, people are concerned, is this even going to be there, you know? So I feel like some of the main things that unions have always been, you know, good for and have been looking at is the pension, right? It's like you work your whole life, and then what are you going to do when you can't work anymore? Like, this is sort of a basic thing. So let's talk about pensions. I mean, it seems like a basic thing. What has happened with the pension over the past years? Like, what's the status? What's the issue?
Okay, so first of all, I want to put two clarifiers out, is that the first thing that people don't understand is that there's a real difference between between public sector pensions and private sector pensions, right? So most of what people don't understand about public sector pensions is that, unlike a private sector pension, I pay into my pension the same as the university does. So I contribute, not the same amount, but there's a contribution rate that's there. And most people don't understand that in the private sector, it is indeed deferred wages and the employer is paying that. In the public sector, it came to agreement years and years ago that we actually pay, and people don't understand that. People believe that our pension plans all come from the employer.
Right.
We've put in half the money.
Okay.
Right? Or we've contributed quite a bit of that. The other thing is that all public sector pension plans are, like, we're all going to be fat cats. So this is the reality of it. I've worked at this university for 26 years now, paying my share, and I've always contributed to the pension plan ever since I've been allowed, and right, since the time I started. If I was to take my retirement at 28, when I would have my 85 factor, I would be retiring on $17,000 a year.
Right.
I don't think that's a fat cat.
It's not going to do it.
No, yeah. That's not going to do it.
Yeah.
So those are the two things that people need to understand. And so what our issue is that people need to remember that pensions have been an issue at the university for quite a while. And what the university is supposed to pay their share, and the union or the member pays their share. Back in the 90s, there was an opportunity for the university to take what is called contribution holidays. And what that meant was there was a legal requirement at that time, and it was to stop corporations from robbing pension plans. So if you had 10 times the amount of money in the pension plan that you then you needed, right? So if it was going to wind up and you could pay all of that out, right? You didn't have to make contributions to the pension plan. What you should have been doing is it should never have stayed there. And what the workers always asked for was make improvements to the pension plan so that those contributions go down and then you have to keep contributing. The university refused to make any of those improvements. So, for example, we've been asking for years for indexation. We don't have indexation on our pension plan. So when we retire, whatever the amount is that we get, that amount does not go up every year to keep in with the cost of living. So if you retire and you're getting $1,000 a month, 10 years from then, you're still going to be getting $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So you can understand why, as our retirees get older, they fall farther and farther into poverty. The university could have done that because the money was there. But instead, they chose to take what was called contribution holidays. So instead of putting into the pension plan, they didn't have to do that. It means that the pension plan is not as well funded. Then move ahead, and we get to the crash of 2008, and they blame everything on that, and we keep reminding them, no, there was pension contribution holidays. So we go into bargaining in 2010, and they're telling us that they have to start taking away some of the benefits, the few benefits that we have in that pension plan. So we had some pretty serious discussions with our members at that time. And our members were quite clear with us. We can't afford to lose those benefits. That's the basics that we need. And so we decided, as a bargaining unit, and to make the pension sustainable, despite the mistakes that they had made, this was our livelihood. This is what we were going to retire on, that we would pay more. But we also put in what we call a reset button that said that when, because we don't get any of the assets, we don't get to say where that money goes. We have no governance control, but we took on some of the liability, right? I think that was very progressive of the bargaining unit to maintain that pension plan, and it was our commitment to that pension plan. The reset said when the pension plan again was fully funded, those contribution rates would revert back to where they were, which to me seems very fair. Mm-hmm. University negotiated it. We signed it in good faith. The university and the union held that up. That's been negotiated in other collective agreements with QP members at other universities across the province. The government accepted that as fine and granted them what's called step one solvency relief. So they accepted it, that it was fine and it met government expectations. We come to the table this time and the university wants that back. We don't think that that's fair. That they want back along with another basket of concessions on the pension plan. So removing more and more and more. We don't think that that's fair. We tabled for them other alternatives to look at with the pension plan. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't even look at that. And we were able to come up with those in a couple of hours with, a pension person sitting with us. The university has just closed their hands. They're just bullying at this point of what the issue on the issue of pensions and throwing out about sustainability and forgetting to mention that they took contribution holidays for a long time, forgetting to mention that in the last round of bargaining, unbeknownst to the union, they filed and put a special payment onto the pensions that they didn't have to do and that they were supposed to tell us, and we just caught it by, and now they took that money from the operating budget. And now the operating budget's $32 million short. Is that a coincidence? Right? So it's a whole tactic that the university is putting out there, using words that people don't understand and fearing people that the pension plan and that people are going to lose their pensions.
Yeah, it is. On the University of Guelph website, the UofG website, they have like a sort of a news section on the front page. And if you go to the September 13 campus bulletin, it's the update on QP 1334 negotiations. The last thing they say is, as noted many times before, the university is attempting to deal with a projected $32.4 million operating shortfall, and we are doing everything we can to reduce the risk to jobs. But it seems to me that there's quite a lot of money going to quite a lot of things at this university. And I think, like you said before, it's a class issue. Like, it's these are the jobs that people don't tend to value, even though this university couldn't function without people doing this work, right?
Right.
And I would just, I mean, I would like to really see, like, I mean, the amount of money that you're talking about in terms of these pension plans, you know, which is a really serious, like, issue of the way people are going to live when they retire. Like, it's a serious thing. And it's like, you know, people put a lot of time and their energy and their life into their job. And like, you know, it's a very serious thing to every individual. And like, how much money is that in the grand scheme of this university? And where is that amount of money being thrown away in other places? And I mean, personally, I just don't buy this whole, we have like a shortfall and we don't have any money, because I can look around and see a lot of people here making a lot of money. And, you know, it's a thing. It's also the same where they're like, oh, we don't have any money, we have to raise tuition. You know, it's like, why, exactly. Why are you taking the people who have the least and constantly asking them to contribute more and more and more? And like, let's look at the people at the top of this university.
Well, and the part that gets me is that they continually talk about the quality of education. And I question then how much actual time do some of our senior administrators. So when I started at this university 26 years ago, at that point, our bargaining unit was almost 400 people. And we had one president and two vice presidents, one for finance and one for academic. So now my bargaining unit is 225. We have more buildings on campus, and we have, I think it's 11, right? One president and 11 VPs at this point. And every one of those VPs has an associate nurse or assistant VP. And yet when you take the amount of time that the interaction between any of those people and students, and you take the time of any interaction between my members and students, there's a big difference, right? On a daily basis, students are going to encounter my members. You wake up in the morning and you cross campus that's been, you know, taken care of by my grounds people. You go into a classroom and they're not my members, but there's QP members, you know, TAing or sessioning in that classroom, right? So the amount of time that students actually spend with workers, I think that's where the quality could be established. And yet, you know, if you look at 225 people trying to keep this campus clean, I mean, we know just on the cleaning standards, we're cleaning to what would be, they will agree that it's moderate dinginess, but if you take the square footage and the number of workers, it's actually unkept neglect is the government standard that's being kept at this university, right? And that's what students are being faced with, mm-hmm. right? That's their learning and living environment, and that's not right. So I have a big problem with, you know, we worked out also that we had, so the university prides itself on supposedly its managers and administrators took 2 years of zeros, but then you look at their bonuses and they took an average of 10% in bonuses and 10% on, you know, 100,000 plus in comparison to our salaries at 40,000 or whatever they're at, right? Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, we did an example where we took 49 of the bonuses would equivalent to more than a 3% wage increase for all of my bargaining unit. So 49 people on this campus got bonuses that would make, that are more than what it would cost to give my members a wage increase.
Right.
Right? So it's just, it's ludicrous.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about wage increases and we've talked about the pension plan. What about job security? So that's the other point of your triangle that you were talking right. about. And what are the issues there?
And for us, that's one of the huge ones. We believe that we're part of this community. The university's tried a lot to exclude us, but we believe we're very much a part of this community. And we know that oftentimes it's the students who look to us because we're the ones that are wearing work clothing. We're the ones that are identified as somebody you would think has authority. We have no authority.
but you look like you do.
We look like we do, right? And so we're the ones that you know people often turn to. We really care about the buildings, right? And we believe that we should be working in these buildings, and we believe that students and staff have the right to know who it is that is working in those buildings, not contractors, not people who don't have any commitment to this university, right? We also believe that the quality of work that we do is of the standard that, right, needs to be done at this university, right? That we're able to do the work, it's quality work, we're part of the community, we have a relationship, we're accountable. It makes a fine community. So we, for all of these years, have always had the rights to work on campus. So when a new building would come, we would move into that building. We know that there is jobs. We know that there's going to have to be locations coming downtown. We know that the only way that this university is going to make more money is that they have to put more bums in the seats, right? More students have to come. We're up to, 21,000 students now at this point? Or we need to figure out where we're going to put these students. We know that it's going to go downtown. So we're trying to get the rights to the buildings downtown. The university has gone further and said, we'll give you the rights to the buildings on campus. We said, we already have the rights. No. We don't have to give you those rights to new buildings. We said, for years and years and years, every time a building's come, oh no, we don't have to do that anymore, right? Same issue down in Windsor. They're now saying a new building coming on the main campus, even though our scope clause says that we have the work on the main campus. They're saying they don't have to give that to us, and they're going to hand it out to contractors. And we're watching in Windsor. That's exactly what we're doing, and we suspect that that's the road that they're trying to go down to here. They're in no way, shape, or form will they give us the right to buildings downtown. They say, yes, they're not going to build any. We say, if you're not going to build any, then give us the rights and nothing will happen. You'll look like winners, right? You look like the good guys. We walk out of that meeting and we talk to people and they tell us, oh, yeah, my department's building downtown. So it's a game again where we don't feel that we're being told the whole truth.
Okay, so we need to wrap this up, although I would love to keep talking for a lot longer. But I would like to talk just, I think, importantly about how can students be in solidarity with workers? So, I mean, like you said, like students and workers interact all the time. Students have large numbers, but don't necessarily have much more power than you folks have in the right. grand scheme of things, except for the numbers. And so if, you know, if a situation does come up on the 3rd and if there is a strike, or if there is a lockout, or even between now and then, what would you like from students who want to support you?
So, and the real crunch is for us is between now and October 3rd, right? So
okay.
we've gone into what we call a whole strike averting mode. And so what we need to do is we want to be able to talk to the students and explain the situation to them exactly what's going on. So there'll be some opportunities. We'll be flyering, doing what we call information pickets. So what we would really like for students is when you see people out doing those information pickets and handing out information, come and hear what the truth is. Come and talk to us. We are in full support of, you know, explaining what everything is. And what we would like to do is have you have that information and then have you engage with the university admin about it, right? About, you know, this is fair and reasonable. We'd like you to go back and to talk with them, right? So the most important thing is to talk with us and let us explain to you that part of the why we're doing this and what it is. And really, the pension issue, I mean, everybody deserves to, we're not only doing that for us, we're doing that for new workers coming in, because everybody deserves to be able to look forward to a future where they can retire with dignity. The job security issue, I think you need to raise to the university that they have a responsibility to make sure that this university is a safe place for not only the workers, but for the students. And part of making it a safe place is making sure that you know who those workers are that are in that building, and that the university they have some accountability to the university, and the university has some control over their actions. And so to make your place safe, you need to be engaged in conversations with the university about that, that you don't want strangers on your campus, that you don't want contractors, that you want other people, and that those people should be QP people.
Thank you so much, Janice. So how, I mean, I talked earlier about an update that was on the University of Guelph website, and presumably there would be more updates, but also presumably those updates are, you know, fairly slanted. It's coming from the administration. So I would recommend that people do keep an eye on that website, but keep in mind that it is coming from a certain perspective. Are there other ways that people can stay updated that's sort of more from the union perspective, or is it just a matter of finding people and talking to them?
So we are trying to figure out right now how we can do regular bulletins. We're doing bulletins to our members, and of course we talk by telephone tree. So I'm working with the Central Students Association right now to figure out a way that we can get have the same constant messaging going to the Student Association as we do going to our workers.
Awesome. Okay, is there anything that you want to add before we end this interview?
I just really want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to put out our perspective and offer the opportunity that we should. Pensions is a huge issue, and you started to talk about the fact about Canada Pension Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I haven't been able to do is say how supportive unions and in particular QP is. That's where we need to be. Everybody deserves a pension plan. So I'd love to come back, and I'd love to talk about pensions and figure out a way that we can have pensions part of a normal dialogue, especially for newer young workers. They need to figure out how we maintain this.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming in, Janice.
Thank you.
Janice is the president of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, QP, Local 1334.